When the RICS proudly hangs a rainbow flag above its HQ on Parliament Square, you know that change is happening. Unless you've been hiding under a rock this month, you will have noticed that Pride parades all around the world have been taking place, with London's Pride happening last Saturday. To proudly celebrate diversity and inclusion, EG produced a special LGBT edition last week and featured a whole host of stories and articles on EGI to showcase just how the industry is tackling LGBT inclusion, or indeed, how it isn't. EG, with JLL and BNP Paribas Real Estate, also conducted one of the biggest surveys of the industry on LGBT attitudes, the results of which were revealed at the first LGBT Property Business Diversity Conference last week. In a snapshot, and you can read the full results by following the link in the show notes, that survey found that 71% of LGBT people in property were out at work. Hurrah for that. But only 28% of those were out to their clients. 42% of them were out to some of their clients. Not so hurrah. And for those that weren't out at work, the vast majority, some 83%, said they would like to be. So why weren't they? Unfortunately, negative reactions from colleagues and clients and fears about the impact it would have on their career were the highest rated reasons for staying in the closet. But this is 2017, and a little later this month, the UK celebrates, if that really is the right word, the 50th anniversary of the decriminalisation of homosexuality. The country has come a long way in 50 years. The real estate industry has come a long way too. But more can be done. And that's exactly what was discussed at BNP Paribas Real Estate and JLL's LGBT Property Business Diversity Conference last week. It was a conference that included leaders from across the real estate sector. But before we hear from some of them, here's Ruth Hunt, the Chief Executive of LGBT charity and campaign group Stonewall, sharing her advice on how to be a really diverse and inclusive business.
Normally in Pride Week, Stonewall's, one of our main sponsors is Adidas, and I have shell-toe trainers with rainbows on, and I have to normally wear them to every single event. But because this is real estate and you are somewhat new to this world, I thought you weren't quite ready for the rainbow shell. So I'm hugely grateful that I've got a day where I don't have to wear shell-toes. I also am hugely grateful. I've been to a lot of renditions of Something Inside So Strong with various choirs this week, because that's what it's like at this time of year. So just briefly, a little bit about who Stonewall are. Stonewall is a very pragmatic, highly strategic, non-democratic charity. We have approximately 125 staff. Our turnover is about 7.5 million. We take no core government funds. We work with 750 employers and have done for the last decade. We work with 2,000 schools on an annual basis. We run a huge number of intervention programs, role model programs, allies programs, leadership programs, and we basically, with the gentlest of hands, help people go from good to great. Now, we say good to great because we're a praise culture, but generally we mean organisations who have yet to learn how to spell lesbian, all the way up to those organisations who are doing some pretty revolutionary and exciting stuff. We keep our prices low because we believe that working with employers is as much part of our charitable objectives as working with activists, but any money we make gets ploughed back into work that we do, for example, training Russian LGBT people on how to achieve change in Polish countries. That's our basic change model. But we also change the law, and we work with government very closely on every party. Which means that I spend a lot of time working with different politicians who all think I belong to them, and that's a great position to be in. So, there's three things I want to tell you today. I've worked at Stonewall for 12 years, started as a little baby junior policy officer, and have held seven different positions in Stonewall over those 12 years. And there are three things I can tell you about what I've seen from organisations we work with. The first is, there is no such thing as meritocracy. Every organisation I work with, and we work with, who are at the beginning of the journey on diversity, all say we only ever recruit the best. We don't care if you're blue, green, yellow, pink, grey, straight, as long as you are the best surveyor, that's all we care about. So we don't really need to do diversity and inclusion. It's not really our concern. And what we see in organisations like that is that there is an attitude to diversity and inclusion that is based on compliance. They give one woman the job of diversity who sits in the corner and doesn't have any relationship with the board and occasionally tries to persuade you that maybe it's time to do a gender pay audit. It never works. The reason why meritocracies don't work is because we are naturally inclined to work with people who think and act and work like us. I am exactly the same. In a crisis in Stonewall, I will always want to pull people in a room who understand what I'm saying before I finish my sentence, who are able to follow me on my journey, who are able to challenge but in a light-hearted way that flatters my ego, who are able to constantly reassure me that I'm doing an excellent job, and support me in any controversial decision I'm making. It is deeply frustrating and annoying in that moment to bring someone in the room who is going to disrupt that narrative and that process. That is human instinct. That's what happens in a moment of crisis. In a moment of recruitment, you work a lot on chemistry. Yes, it's skill-based, but let's look at the skill-based for a moment. When you have a skill-based audit, you compare a CV like for like. A young white woman with very, very privileged, educated parents who goes to a very good school will have done better on that CV than someone from a low-income background who had no place to do their homework, sharing a bedroom with three siblings. You cannot assess intellectual capability or potential based on those comparable CVs. There is a basic skill threshold. We need to make sure that those two kids have the same skills, but you're not even having a level playing field when you get to recruitment stage. Someone who is LGBT, more likely to be bullied. Our latest survey shows that 50% of young trans people have committed attempted suicide in the last year. 45% of LGBT young people are bullied at school. They are finding experiences online in high risk taking situations and they avoid school. The odds of them getting to that first class degree on the same terms as that other person is not likely. And then when they're in front of you and you're interviewing, you will be inclined to go with the person who's got the same level of bounce and relationship with you, because we are naturally inclined to do what we call affinity bias. Affinity bias is when we want to work with people who are like us. And I do it myself. I have to really concentrate really hard when I'm recruiting to not recruit bright, white, Oxbridge young people. And that's because I'm an Oxford graduate. And I think it makes the best people, and they're really clever and they're really smart. That makes me an idiot. That makes me a really bad recruiter. And I have to actively teach myself to not do that. I have to make sure who's on the panel with me is someone who's going to go, they've just got the chat, Ruth. They're not actually going to step up and solve the problem. That person, who's a bit more nervous in the interview, will be really good at the systems that you don't value, but you actually need. You have to think differently. The third thing is that when that person gets in, something happens called assimilation. So I do a lot of work with the security services, and they say, we're going to recruit loads of different people, because we've realized that white men in chinos with a modern language degree is not going to change Islamic fundamentalism. Which is quite a revolutionary idea, and it took some getting there. Even when they recruit people who look different, what is success looks like means that everybody emulates the same style of leadership in order to impress the big boss who's responsible for your promotion. So even if you've recruited a diverse bunch of people, they still end up trying to act like what you deem to be successful in order to get on. There are very few people who can be as successful as you when they act like you. The only person who can be successful like you is you. Anyone who's pretending to be like you is likely to be less effective. That means the people who are more like you rise to the top, which means you have institutions at the very top who look, act, think, and work in the same way. And even when you have a Benetton advert of diversity around that table, you have your woman, you have your black one, you have your gay one, they still feel obliged to think, act, work, and respond in the same way. If you can crack that, diversity will be an outcome of the work you do. The second big mistake that organisations make is they think about diversity in terms of the beginning. If we recruit 10% BAME people, if we recruit 50% women, we will have a diverse outcome. If you change your way of working, diversity will come. And that means changing what leadership looks like, changing what success looks like, changing about how you value what people contribute to the organisation. It will not happen without genuine, wholehearted belief from senior leadership that this is the right thing to do. I see countless organisations that divest this work a bit like it's health and safety. There is a vague sense of compliance and a sense that it's probably something that should be done, but there's only so much we can do because, you know, look at our demographics, it's really hard. It's not our fault that all the architects look like that. It's not our fault. Senior leaders have to openly and transparently own the work that's happening and the different way of thinking and seeing about their workforce and the work they do. My final message is something that Stonewall takes very seriously. We struggle with black, Asian, minority ethnic staff in Stonewall. It's really hard to recruit BAME staff in. We've had to have a massive cultural overhaul, me and myself included, about how we think about how we work. This is a constant journey for all of us. We have a saying in Stonewall called kind eyes. And kind eyes means that you trust the intention of the person in front of you who's doing their best to make their journey on this. If you are paralysed with fear about getting it wrong and saying the wrong thing and feeling that you've got to suddenly become an expert on Foucault and the back catalogue of Erasure in order to do anything LGBT inclusive, you will not get there. So introduce with this work programme a culture of calling in, not calling out, and kind eyes that means that you can constructively and with warmth and respect challenge each other about how to improve things and get things better. That means the most junior BAME staff at Stonewall can say to me, actually, Ruth, the way you responded to that wasn't right. And I can say, thank you very much for saying it. Thanks for not saying it on Twitter. Thanks for not pitching me. Thanks for not saying and condemning me out of hand. Thank you for looking me in the eye and talking about it. And I have to not be defensive and adolescent about that either. If you get those three things in your mind, I promise you, your diversity will change. And Stonewall is in a very strong, very experienced position to help you see these things differently. Our staff are extraordinarily dedicated and capable. They all could earn a lot more doing D&I in other organisations. You pay three times what we pay, and they do it because they want to stick with it and help as many institutions as possible. We share best practice, we cross-pollinate, we introduce you to each other because we ultimately want to make the world a better place. Thank you very much.
So just three key things could be all that you really need to make your business a great place to work, not just for some, but for everyone. Next up, here's British Land Chief Executive Chris Grigg.
We have come a long way in terms of diversity. And I think actually, ironically, particularly maybe from a low base in this particular space, what I do think is worth just alluding to is that there is sometimes confusion in my mind between kind of three things in this space, and I mean both specifically and generically. That is the what versus the how versus the why. And I think what I'm supposed to talk about is the why, but I just wanted to touch on the first two very, very briefly. In terms of the what, I thought Ruth said it brilliantly well and very simply, right? And that was, I'm going to read because I don't want to get it wrong, changing how we are. And that for me is what this is about. It's about changing how we are. Because the world around us is changing, and many people have commented on that, but for me that sums up much better than I could myself what this is all about. A lot of people have talked here about the how, so I'm not really going to spend any time on that, apart from to make a couple of observations. Okay? The first of those observations is that tone from the top, in my experience at the top, does make a difference. And I think if you don't have that, then it's really hard to make progress. Now that may sound self-serving, it's not meant that way. It is just the observation that if people do not believe that at the senior level of the company, whether that be the senior partner, whether that be the board, whatever it is, if those people are not committed to this thing, then it ain't gonna work. But I don't think it's just about that for lots of reasons, and I just wanted to pick on one other thing, and that word I was gonna use is momentum. If you start to get momentum and you can continue to build on that, then you have a chance of moving forward towards, and let's face it, none of us would, I hope, claim to be even close to optimal. But if you can start to build on that momentum, you have a chance of getting to a decent place. And just to pick on one BL-specific example, We have just run our first ever survey around diversity, and we got 95% of people, actually, we just got the results. 95% of the people chose to take part. That's a high number by industry standards, and only 1% of those 95 weren't prepared to declare their sexuality. Now, if we had tried that 2 or 3 years ago, I think that would have been very disappointing. I think it turned out, and this wasn't my call, it was a call of the team, that has helped build momentum. So judging that, and you for sure can go too fast or too slow, but that strikes me as really important. The third aspect of this, I think, which is worthy of thought, is also something that Ruth touched on, which is, are you doing this in terms of it being good business, or are you doing it because you think it's important for societal or personal conscience reasons or whatever? And it strikes me, the way I've always done it, let's just keep it personal, is I think you make a much better case to external stakeholders if you fit it in the context of a business why, and I'll come back to that in a second, but from a tone from the top perspective, I think it's easier to carry legitimacy if people believe it, if you do it because people think that you personally believe in it. So I would make that distinguishing point. I think in terms of, you know, the whys, then people have talked about that a lot. I don't intend to spend much time on it, but just to rehearse three things from my perspective. One is delivery. Customer focus. Our customers are changing. Our customers right across the board represent society more generally, definitionally, far more broadly than we do. To get it right, we have to be a bit more like them. If I pick on one thing, which I think Brian touched on some time ago, I don't think we've even started scratching the surface of how our buildings look and feel and deal with people in a truly inclusive manner. That is work for the future. But I do come back to something that was said a lot, diversity of thought, you know, groupthink, all this stuff. Many companies have got themselves, including my previous industry in financial institutions, got themselves into enormous trouble simply by thinking the same way altogether. I think we also think about it in terms of inside and outside. What do I mean by that? Inside our building, employee well-being. Do people feel that they can bring their whole selves to work in this space? We think really makes a difference to how effective we'll be and how happy and how effective our people will be. We've also found, and this I would not claim was obvious in advance, but certainly the various groupings we've had set up around all forms of diversity have ended up being real engines of collaboration across the business, which we didn't necessarily expect, but boy, did it work well for us, and that must be important. Finally, it's been touched on again, so I'm not going to do any more than mention it, but the war for talent, if you just think about this point about increasingly we will be recruiting and are recruiting from millennials. Most of the millennials, who may, by the way, be one of the most researched groups in history, whether they're different, it's a more complicated thing, but we don't have time for that discussion, and I'm bound to get myself in trouble. But if you believe half of this stuff, and certainly just talking to the people I meet, they just don't think this is an issue. They regard it as normal for organisations to be diverse. We are having to play catch up. If we don't, to the point that's just been made, we won't be able to recruit those people, gay or straight, female or male, all those groupings, unless, because they will regard organisations that aren't like that as peculiar. Finally, I don't think many people have talked about this maybe enough, and although it shouldn't be front and centre, there is a wall of expectation coming at us as public companies, as private companies, as to what our stakeholders, ranging from government to suppliers to people buying from us, are going to expect. If we can't answer their questions satisfactorily, that will be bad for us.
Tone from the top and strong allies appear to be the key. Stratton Parker's Andy Martin certainly thinks so.
Strong leadership is the thing that we need, because affecting change from the bottom is hard. So strong leadership, I think we all said, is the one thing that we should be engendering and making sure that we are actually leading from the top.
But what makes a good ally? Here's Cushman & Wakefield's Colin Wilson answering that question.
Vocal, visible, senior, with consistent themes, being consistent and genuine. And then I think a willingness and a preparedness to act when you hear something that isn't acceptable. How do you make it more real? How do you make it more senior? You need to make sure there's also a linkage to reward. Personal reviews at the end of the year, how do we actually include that and make sure that the behaviours are being upheld?
And I think this issue of industry leadership, we picked up a big concern that the data underneath here may not really show regional, significant regional differences, and a huge encouragement for the leaders in the major firms and the professional bodies to reach out and provide support to medium and small-sized organisations who are probably struggling the most.
That was Rick's boss, Sean Thompson, on the role that leaders need to play across the country. It is actions, though, that will speak louder than words. And it was Andy Martin that said what we were all thinking. Here he is.
Are the leaders of the various businesses here just because they feel they should be? And I thought that's a great, great challenge. And I think it's actually one of those that we do have to take away and work together to make sure we are responding to what we've heard today. And actually we're making it very clear as a group, as an industry group, and responding to Sean, that we're all working together to make sure that we are a better industry tomorrow than perhaps we are here if we are today.
If you've been inspired by this podcast and want to find out more about the conference and read all of EG's coverage, head over to the show notes for your free download of our LGBT special. And don't forget to visit www.egi.co.uk/news for all your real estate news, data and analysis needs. Thanks for listening.